Let's go, Nathan would move the minutes of March 17th.
I move the minutes of March 17th.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just looking. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The minutes are approved. We do have a quorum.
Is that a 1-0, Magnus?
The first bill up is House File 3036, Representative Saylor. Welcome to the committee. Representative Saylor, it doesn't look like it, but we have a quorum somewhere in here.
Oh, really?
It's okay, I'll put your word for it.
Oh, if someone can move the bill, or otherwise I'll move the House File 3036.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It'd be go to finance if we get that.
Yes.
Representative Saylor.
I'll be fairly brief here, but this bill is basically about starting a non-motorized transportation advisory committee so that MnDOT will establish this committee to advise the department on the issues of needs of safety and education and program development. There'll be 18 members appointed to represent non-motorized interests and organizations, one each from MnDOT's non-metro districts and four from the metro district, and seven at large. There's no compensation for members, and at this point, I do also have an amendment.
There's Amendment A1.
Yes.
The chair will move House File 3036, Amendment A1. All in favor say aye. All in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The amendment is approved. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to turn it over to the testifier, Mr. Eric Levine. Pronounce it correctly. Who will further explain the bill and answer any questions if there are any questions coming forward? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Berdine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And this non-motorized transportation advisory committee will actually replace an existing committee, which is the State Bicycle Advisory Committee. And that committee was established under Minnesota Session Laws 1984. And we're seeking to move the authorizing language from session law into statutes and to slightly expand the role of the committee to advise on other forms of non-motorized transportation. You can see in the bill that there are several other state agencies and groups that would be involved in this new committee. They're already involved in the State Bicycle Advisory Committee, so it's nothing new in that respect. And there shouldn't be any additional cost to the state because the Bicycle Advisory Committee expenses are approximately $8,000 per year, and they would just be transferred over to this new committee. I really don't have anything additional, Mr. Chair. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer those.
Mr. Redding, I see there's not a fiscal note, but as you say, there's a transfer basically from what you had.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Now, basically, this deals with strictly non-motorized. What would you say, Mr. Radin, is other non-motorized other than bicycles?
Mr. Chair, mainly that would be pedestrian. It could theoretically include other forms of non-motorized transportation, like rollerblading or other things like that, but mainly it would be pedestrian.
Any questions from the committee? If not, the chair, we'll renew this motion that House File 3036, as amended, be recommended, passed, and sent to the Finance Commission. As amended, we move the amendment. Yeah. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? House File 3036 is on its way to finance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Number?
See the next. House File is up in the door. House File 3558.
Yes.
So you want to move your bill, Representative Madora?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3558. Mr. Chair, we actually are wondering if this is a bill that could go to the floor. We have a question about the
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alyssa Solander. I'm with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association.
Excuse me, just a minute. You had a question?
Chair, this just brought to my attention about the next place for this to go. So in order for me to move it, I need clarification on that.
I believe it has to go to finance.
Right. It will? Okay.
That's what I was going to look at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then that is what I moved on, that House File 3558 be moved to finance, recommended to pass and moved to finance.
Representative Madora, you have also a delete all amendment?
Yes, I do.
We should move that delete all amendment before its testimony.
So that's DE1?
DE1, that's correct. Representative Madora moves it to delete all amendment DE1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Madora.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to allow my testifier to pick up on this. We've had some changes to it, so I think it's probably best.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alyssa Solander. I'm with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. Mr. Chair, this is a very simple bill. All we are doing with this bill is allowing the Department of Drug and Vehicle Services to issue a temporary permit, especially for the professional golfers who will be in town here for the U.S. Women's Open in June. We did this exact same thing when the men were here, the men professional golfers were here for the men's U.S. Open in 1991, and we are just allowing the women's professional golfers to do the same thing, is to drive their courtesy cars for the short period of time during the tournament, and the vehicle manufacturer will cover all costs involved in the production of plates and covering the costs from driving vehicle services or whatever comes up. We have vetted this language with the chair and driver and vehicle services and law enforcement, and everybody's okay with it. Very non-controversial piece.
Any questions of the testifier, Representative Holbert?
Mr. Chair, and what I'm wondering is if, and I'm sorry if I missed it, with the 50 pairs required to reissue, does that cover the cost of making the plates?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, we'll need approximately 250 sets of plates. I think when we said we want the exact same language as the men's U.S. Open, they just took that, so it says at least 60 sets of plates. We'll need about 250 sets of plates, and when we asked the department how much the fee should be, they gave us this fee so that it would be revenue neutral. All right, thank you.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, just so you're aware, in the delete all amendment, that number is increased to 250. It's on page 1, line 9 of the DE1 amendment. That's the number of plates that has to be issued.
Permits. Any further questions? Representative Madora?
Mr. Burris, on the DE1 amendment, okay, the number of permits. Okay. Because on line 1.18, it still says 60. Oh, 60 days. I'm sorry. Get it for the number. Thank you. Never mind. I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions of the testifier? If not, all in favor of House File, or do you want to renew your motion, Representative?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair, and thank you again for bearing with me. I would again like to move that House File 3558 be recommended
as
to pass.
Amended.
And as amended, and to move on to finance.
Yes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? House File 3558 is sent on its way to finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
We have the next one, Severson. Representative Severson. This goes.
Thank you.
President Severson, this goes to finance too.
Okay. This goes to the finance committee?
Yeah. You want to move the bill?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I would move House File 3706 be passed as and sent to the finance committee.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this is the one of the things I like doing, and that's removing some surcharges from our constituency here. So I there are plates that have reached the number of production that is covered, and once they've reached that, then that surcharge needs to come off. And I will let Ms. McCormick explain a little further at this point.
Ms. McCormick.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, BVS Director. And this initiative was forwarded from our support services program area within DVS, because we have paid for all the costs associated with the design and setup for this particular group of veterans plates. And so the $5 surcharge is no longer needed. It will reduce the vehicle services operating account by around $4,000. But certainly we don't want to charge our customers more money than what our production costs and operation costs are. And so we would request that this $5 surcharge be repealed.
Questions from the committee? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably for the chair, just this is background information. You and I have sat through a number of these. Can you help me recall what were the issues around enforcement that law enforcement had around different license plates? Is there a uniformity issue that we have to be careful about relative to law enforcement finding plates uniformly readable, or what was the background on that?
Representative Hausman, I think I spoke to Ms. McCormick about it. The plate has to be visible within 100 feet. Basically, that's the simple explanation. Ms. McCormick, or either Mr. Burris, the issue was license plate. Could you explain a license plate? Basically, a license plate has to be visible and readable within 100 feet. Is there any other stipulation? I think some of ours are pretty marginal as we looked at. And some of them don't comply, I can tell you that.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there is also, I don't remember the exact wording, but it talks about being reflective as well, and in addition to the distance that you have to be able to read it from. And we, in DVS, we have a separate law enforcement advisory committee that just works with us with plates, and we have become much stricter in how, after we had the plate with the Support Our Troops plate, was the one where we had a great deal of difficulty with the design. And the design, the first design that was forwarded, law enforcement didn't take it and test it, and now because of that we're on our third design on Support Our Troops, and we are now asking that they test it, they take it out on the road, they use it in the dark, they see what happens after it's been used on the vehicles for a while, so we get a better sense of all the weather conditions that could be causing issues with them being able to see the plate. And most especially, what we found is we cannot have any kind of dark background where the numbers and the letters on the plate are. We need that to be very, you know, pale or white. And so we are working on plates. When we have plates that come up, we are trying to ensure that area is free from any kind of design that would interfere with law enforcement's ability to read that plate.
I think that was it, Representative Hollisman.
No.
Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Representative Stevenson or Ms. McCormick, I'm just doing a quick math here. Would it be about 800 plates do we estimate under these three categories? I'm just multiplying by five to get to the $4,000. Just into the number of plates that we might be providing under the...
Yeah, and I just...
Providing, you know,
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, that was the question I just asked as the farmer just before. And on this one, I think it was 759 plates we hit equity, so just about 800 plates. But she also said that the cost of plates are going up, so it'll probably be, as we get newer plates in there that we have to get new molds for and the initial costs go up, it'll probably be an increased number of plates.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Houston, I'm not objecting to the bill at all, just informational about the number of plates.
That's
thank you.
Good question.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. McCormick answered essentially, the question and the frustration that I've heard from my law enforcement during my ride-along, you can really experience it. That, I mean, I don't have great eyes to start with, but from 20 feet, it's very hard to read the support our troops and others. And I know that there's just a general rule in graphic design even to not do red against blue or blue against red. And I think the lack of embossment also is one of the things that stamping is also one of the challenges on that. So I'll talk privately with Ms. McCormick about kind of where things are at on all the plates and reflectivity, but it is a big issue, especially if we want to catch folks that are not driving, or driving stolen vehicles or without good tabs or whatever. It's incredibly difficult to see some of the plates and to read them.
Mr. Chair, just to let the committee know, and maybe we can, as we mentioned last year during our budget session, we were moving to a flat plate design, and we have now gotten law enforcement's approval of that flat plate design, and so maybe at a committee meeting, an upcoming committee meeting, once I can get a copy of that, of the regular Minnesota plate. We have reached agreement with law enforcement to make sure things are crisp, they're able to see it, and it works well no matter what the weather conditions are, and maybe I can bring over a sample for the committee's review so they can see what it looks like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we do have time at some point, I think that would... I know this is kind of a small issue, but it's also a pretty critical issue to making law enforcement work. It's just amazing how many times they run plates when they're doing their shifts, probably hundreds of times during regular shifts, and I think that we just don't want them frustrated if they're doing that and want to be able to run it. So I'd appreciate that if we have time, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olberg.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering which fund paid for the second and third design changes.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, it's out of the vehicle services account, special revenue account. That's the account that we have we can take our production costs out of that design, but we don't throw the other, we have to go through the other plates that were already produced. So when we've done a third design, we did not start releasing the third design until we had used up the plates for the first two plates because they had already been produced.
And Mr. Chair and Ms. McCormick, so did the $5 surcharge that's now being repealed pay for those additional designs?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, that isn't what was that. There wasn't a surcharge on that one. This is just on the Iraq that Afghan war vet and GWOT veteran plate. That was a special contribution plate that was for veterans and military affairs.
And Mr. Chair, just I'm curious. I have one of the supported troop plates, and they're very flimsy, and they bend, and they get caught on stuff. Are all of the plates now going to that type of metal?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, that is the flat plate design, correct? That is the new design that we're using now. And those plates were produced in Iowa because we used to have to do the contribution plates, critical habitat and support our troop are their contribution plates. Those used to be done in Iowa because we did not have flat plate equipment. We just got state-of-the-art flat plate equipment through MinCorp, and MinCorp is producing them, starting, or they're, I think they're just getting into implementing it in at Rush City. So we're just starting our own flat plate production, but that was from Iowa. Why, Iowa's Corrections Department is where we have it done. Probably when you had your plate.
But Mr. Chair and Ms. McCormick, you're not changing the metal to make it more substantial, in other words.
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, no, it's just, it's aluminum.
Any further questions? Not Representative Severson renews his motion that
This bill be passed and passed on to finance. And Mr. Chair, I'll find out what's happening with the Senate side here, because I think they may have rolled it into transportation omnibus bill. If they did, then I may make a floor action to have it brought back to committee and rolled in as well.
Okay. Any no further questions? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. Your bill is passed and sent to finance. We have temporarily postponed Representative Kalin's bill till next week. I believe that's correct. And the next bill up would be Representative Hornstein, and we have a lot of amendments and I'm sure a lot of activity on this one. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I would like to move House File 3725 for a recommendation to pass and I think further consideration by the Finance Committee. Would that be the correct motion?
That's correct. Yeah. Representative Hornstein.
Okay. Depending on the Chair's preference, maybe I could just go over the bill quickly with MnDOT and Met Council, and then we could take the amendments separately, or do you want to just approve them to get them in the shape I'd like them in?
Representative Hornstein, you don't have a delete all, do you?
No. I just have four individual amendments.
Are these your amendments?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Except for, I think there might be a couple of others that aren't, but I could identify which ones
there's
are mine.
There's A1, A6, and A8.
5, 6, 7, and 8 are mine.
Oh, I don't even have them yet. You start out with 5, 6, 7, and 8?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've never heard so much paper shuffling.
You want to, all these amendments?
I think most of them are not controversial. I think there might be a couple that could bear some discussion, but I think at least two of them are
okay.
Probably pretty easy.
Whatever way you want to handle it. But,
okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that for the benefit of the committee and the public, we could go over the bill as it is, and then I could ask, we could have a conversation about that, and then we could do the amendments,
okay.
If that's okay with you.
Okay.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3725 is enabling legislation to move forward the Urban Partnership Agreement. I know many of you are actually on a trip that we took in December along the corridor, and we discussed this in great detail. For those of you who weren't, this is a initiative that MnDOT and the Met Council have jointly collaborated on and received a significant amount of federal money for. It is a way to expand transit and relieve congestion along the I-35 and Cedar Avenue corridors. The Twin Cities Metro Region, through Met Council and MnDOT, were one of several cities, I believe a total of five cities that were selected in a very competitive process with the U.S. Department of Transportation. I think only Miami, San Francisco, and New York were among the other, and Seattle were the other cities that were awarded this. So we feel very, very fortunate to be the recipients of $133.5 million of federal money for this purpose. I will, I think we have a representative from MnDOT who's here who can actually go through the what this will do on the corridor, specific changes that this will bring to the corridor of 35W.
Okay.
I'll just say, in closing, we have strong support from all of the municipalities along the corridor for this project, and those are represented through the I-35W Solutions Alliance as well, and would ask for your support.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nick Thompson. I'm from MnDOT's Metro District, working on the UPA program. As Representative Ward C. said, this is a important bill or important project for the region that has an underlying goal to reduce congestion both on 35W and Highway 77. We are doing some things that are both truly innovative on this corridor and some of the things we've done in our region that we know work. It's a true partnership between us and Met Council, the cities, the counties, and a lot of the members that represent their commuters on that corridor. We'll be implementing the MinPass type lane that we do have on 394 currently. That's been very successful. We'll be implementing that on 35W, as well as quite a bit of new transit facilities and transit operations on the corridor and on 77. One of the key new strategies here is the concept of dynamic shoulders, and that is a concept where we allow during certain hours of the day, we open up, in this case it will be the left shoulder of northbound 35W as it approaches downtown Minneapolis. We would allow, if this bill passes, allow cars to drive on that shoulder under certain conditions in a safe manner. In this instance, we would also be opening that shoulder to carpools, buses, and drivers who choose to pay to use that piece of 35W. So it'll operate when it's open, just like a MinPass type lane that we have in place on 394 for that dynamic shoulder. That shoulder, in this case, will be on the left side of the northbound 35W. As you drive on it, it'll be 12 foot wide like a normal lane, separated by a shoulder on its left, and so it'll operate safely using both pavement and technology to inform the drivers on when it's open and the price that it would be. It's a new tool that that has been used in Europe and not used in the United States. It's a tool that's very effective, a very low cost tool for reducing congestion and opening up some of our bottlenecks in the Twin Cities region. Some of the unique parts about UPA also is that obviously we don't have the authority to open a shoulder to drive cars driving on that lane, so we did propose that in our application. And so the federal funds that are coming to UPA are kind of contingent on us receiving that authority from the state legislature. And the federal funds themselves have not arrived in the region yet. They have indicated to us, or part of our agreement with the federal government is that we won't receive the federal funds until we have the authority to implement the tools that we're proposing in our UPA. And we have a unique deadline on this project, a few different unique deadlines. The first being that we have to have the authority in place by May 12th of this year for those federal funds to become available. And the second one, the more aggressive one, is that all of these components of UPA, for the most part, there's 30 different projects within it. They have to be done and open to the public, for the most part, by September 30th of 2009. So it's a very aggressive timeline to implement some major changes, major improvements on the 35 and 77 in downtown Minneapolis system, but it's ones that we've been working hard on and we know we can get implemented in that short time frame.
Mr. Thompson, what was the authority you need?
As described in this bill, the authority to allow cars to drive on a designated shoulder lane under certain conditions. Currently, we in Minnesota, a shoulder, when it's marked as a shoulder, cannot be a travel lane for traffic. So when we open this during certain hours of operation, we actually just need the authority through signing and striping type arrangements and a legislative statutory authority to allow cars to drive on that when it's open.
Is that statutory authority in this bill?
Yes.
Okay. And is it only the one lane northbound, not on the southbound?
Our original proposal included the southbound in the same area in Minneapolis, but we were asked by the federal government to scale back our proposal, so we took out the southbound portion. So in this initial implementation is only northbound, but should you know, this becomes successful, it's a concept that could be applied in any other corridor, in many other corridors, including Southbound in the same area.
You didn't lose your median capacity or anything?
Mr. Chair, no, we didn't lose the median capacity for Southbound.
Representative Holmesman.
Mr. Chair, how many miles total? We're only talking one direction now.
Yep. The dynamic shoulder, Mr. Chair, members, the dynamic shoulder portion of this is roughly 2 miles. The entire corridor that includes the MnPath lane is over 16 miles northbound and about 12 miles southbound on 35W.
But I thought, Mr. Chair, you said southbound wasn't included.
Southbound will not have a dynamic shoulder, however, it will have a MnPath-type hot lane because we have an existing high-occupancy vehicle lane that we'll be converting, and within the 35W Crosstown project, we're building a high-occupancy vehicle lane also, so that'll be converted in part of UPA.
And just to clarify then, Mr. Chair, you said 16 miles going north and 12 miles going south.
Mr. Chair,
total. And then, Mr. Chair, I heard in the introductory comments all communities along the corridor and cities and counties along the corridor. Do we have a list? What do we mean when we say all communities, all cities and counties?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the recipients of the UPA are actually MnDOT and Met Council. We did develop it, though, with input from the cities, the counties that are in the affected corridors from Minneapolis south through to Lakeville.
Is that too many to list?
I can start to list them. Minneapolis, Richfield, Bloomington, Burnsville, Lakeville, Eagan, Apple Valley, Dakota County, Hennepin County. We have a park and ride in Anoka County. So it goes to the north part also. It also involves the University of Minnesota as a member, as receiving some of the funds through UPA. So those are the cities that are part of the initial phase here of UPA.
And Mr. Chair, if my understanding is Lakeville has now made a determination not to be part of the taxi district, does it affect their role in this project in UPA?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the UPA itself is, funds the capital components of investment, and within the UPA program, we do have two park and rides in the city of Lakeville that are planned for construction. UPA itself is not funding the bus operations for any of the improvements we're making. We're just funding the capital infrastructure investments.
And Mr. Chair, presumably we wouldn't want to build two park and rides that would never be operated. Would that be common sense?
Mr.
Chair, members of the committee, there are different options. Yes, there are one of the park and rides is today a carpool lot. It is not served by transit, but it can function as a transportation purpose. But ideally, in the long term, our park and rides should have bus service to them.
And Mr. Chair, just finally, this was, of course, it happened so quickly. Is that part of the kind of disconnect between local government's decisions and the forward movement of the project?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a very unique in terms of speed. Yes, the federal government announced that $1 billion would be available for this urban partnership in December of 2006, and applications were due 4 months later. That is an extremely aggressive timeline for us to put together a very comprehensive agreement. So for the most part, we took projects that were on the books that were developed through the region, but we're sitting there unfunded, and a lot of our components involve those type of projects. But yes, we in that initial application, because it was a tight timeline, I think there were some people that felt they were left out of that planning process. And so we have definitely tried to kind of close that loop back through different workshops, different public meetings, as much outreach as we can do. And we know we have a lot more to connect with the cities and counties, and we have plans throughout this year to get out and meet and make sure everybody is comfortable with the things that we're developing. But for the most part, we did not invent a bunch of new projects here. We took projects that had been in development and had very good outreach, very good commitment, very good working with cities and counties and try to move them forward from where they had been sitting because they did not have funding.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I just have to ask one more question. And partly it is a challenge for those of us who are writing some of these bills because, for the most part, we don't have enough money. And we're trying to shrink everything, but in this case, this project, we were given very specific directions, and we heard that from both MnDOT and Met Council. We have to have language. We have to have a very specific set of deal bonds and cash and so forth, totaling $55 million, and there's no flexibility around that. You know, we can cut a lot of other things in other bills, but this one we can't cut. But it feels as though the external part of this is a little more elusive. We're given very strict parameters, and we are told we are not allowed to cut that. It has to be fully funded. But the sense of the planning out there is a little looser, not quite so tied up.
Chair, members of the committee, a good example would be a project that we're building the hot lane on 35W. Yes, we know what our budget is for that. We know what the match needs are for that and what the federal government is requiring. However, there's some definite parameters that are to be defined as we design the project. And that project and just like the other 30 projects that are within UPA have a lot of design elements within them that we need to work out details with them, and that is the looser part of the project that we clearly are wanting to work with the cities, counties, and partners on that corridor to help define, for instance, things like where toll entrance points would be, or where park and ride how big a park and ride could be, where exactly a park and ride should be within a certain parameters. In other examples, within Bloomington, we will be having a park and ride near 82nd Street, but the site hadn't been secured, so there's different options. We're working with the city to find a good location in that general area, but we have some options around where that should be. So there's some components that are flexible. There are some that are very defined. For instance, needing the ability to allow cars to drive on the shoulder is a very specific. There isn't wiggle room on that. We do need that authority in order to get the federal funds.
Representative Holder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think, I don't know where Representative Hausman got the idea that Lakeville hasn't chosen to be part of the transit taxing district. They've been having meetings with Met Council and MnDOT and trying to work out a mutually agreed upon service expansion agreement. And I think they passed a resolution last night. I think it has to do with the language in the bill. But they continue to work, and there are infrastructure needs that would have to be put in place in order for transit to work in the community, and so that's what they've been working on.
Representative Medora.
Mr. Chair, yes, and Mr. Thompson, can you tell me, there's been some talk that there was a requirement that Lakeville be into the taxing district by May 12th in order to be able to operate. Is that in fact a true statement? And if it is a true statement, what is the holdup, and how does this resolution that was passed last night by the City Council that says basically we are not going to be joining the taxing district, how is that going to be interpreted for the project long term?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the May 12th deadline is clearly around the ability to allow cars to drive on the shoulder in that dynamic shoulder lane. That is the deadline set by the federal DOT in order to release the federal funds. That's the only, around this date, that's the key, that's where the May 12th date comes from. It is not tied at all to the transit taxing district that I'm aware of.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Medora.
Mr. Thompson, my understanding of this entire UPA contract is that we were required by law to not only pass the comprehensive transportation bill by May 12th, 90 days after the start of session, but that the shoulder language and all of this was passed also by May 12th. Is that not accurate?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the May 12th is for what I've been phrasing as the policy bill, which is the dynamic shoulder portion. That releases the federal funds. Federal funds do need to be matched. And so the budget portion of the match, which has been part of both the bonding bill and the transportation bill, I guess it's unclear whether that has to be, I don't think that needs to be there by May 12th, because basically you have to be able to match your federal funds when you request those federal funds. And so those requests for federal funds will be coming as we start to let projects over the time. And we just have to make, ensure that we have that match dollars, usually 20%, available when we need to spend those federal funds. So the May 12th is more about the dynamic shoulder. But clearly, we need the match dollars too. Otherwise, we can't move forward with this project.
Representative,
yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the other aspect of this is who right now is on target to be able to operate the CPA line. Who is the transit agency that's prepared to run this line? Because with Lakeville not being part of the taxing district, we do not have transit authority for our local opt-out. So who is on task to run this line? If it's approved and we decide to match the money.
Mr. Thompson.
Chair, members of the committee, there's a mix here. The online for sure are the Metro Transit and MBTA for those that are within their current operating boundaries. So on Cedar Avenue 77 and on 35W and up in Anoka County and on 35W. They have service there today, and they have expanding that. Metro Transit is taking the lead as project development within the city of Lakeville for the construction of the parking rides. But there's no determination that I'm aware of. There's members from that council here that could correct me if they have determined who's providing service to the parking rides outside of that tax, outside of those boundaries. I don't think that's been determined.
Representative Morgan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Metro Transit is taking the lead on the possibility of providing service in Lakeville. I'm not sure how that works. Could you explain that? Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, members, they are taking the lead on the development of the construction project, of the capital investment for the parking rides. That's what has been set at this point. Operations servicing those parking rides, that is providing that has not been determined yet.
Representative Morgan.
Under current law, would Metro Transit be able to provide operations in the Lakeville?
We've got another gentleman, I think. You may as well stay there too, Mr. Thompson. We'll bring another chair if you want to pull one up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. Representative Morgan, can you restate your question one more time here quick, just to make sure I got it?
Sure, Mr. Shetland. Under current law, would Metro Transit be eligible to provide operational service into Lakeville if those parking rides under the UPA were indeed built there?
Mr.
Chair and Representative, that would require a couple things to happen first. First, Lakeville would have to come into the transit taxing district for that to happen. For any service to be able to occur in Lakeville, there's going to have to be a change in the transit taxing district. Either through this bill, if you're going to force Lakeville and Farmington to come in, otherwise there's still the opportunity for a voluntary agreement to be put in place for Lakeville or Farmington to come into the UPA. If that does occur, then yes, the Metro Transit could provide that service. However, if Lakeville and Farmington do come in to the transit taxing district, there is an opportunity for the council and the city, or the cities, to sit down, look at, and see what type of service should occur there, and Metro Transit could provide it, or MBTA could provide it through a contract. But right now, the service area that MBTA has would not allow them to go into Lakeville or Farmington or wherever else where there isn't service right now. But that they are not, and I need to be clear, they are not being told that they cannot do that. It would just have to be done through a contract. I mean,
Representative Morgan.
So let me clarify. Under current law, neither Metro Transit nor the MBTA would be eligible to provide service in Lakeville at those stations built under the EPA.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, that's correct, because at this point in time, Lakeville is not a member of the Transit Taxing District.
Representative Morgan?
I think this is my last question, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure, but maybe just for a while. If Lakeville did choose to become part of the Transit Taxing District, then the opportunity to sign a contract with a provider, whether it is MGTA or MetTransit, would that be entirely up to Lakeville?
Mr. Shetland?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I think that it would have to be negotiated between the city and the provider. I don't think that Lakeville would just be able to decide, because it would be participating in a larger system, and that's where it would have to be decided who the appropriate provider would be at that point. I mean, there's some issues there.
Okay. Thank you,
but
Mr. Chair.
It would only happen if there's a change. And
Representative Holmberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Shetman, does the UPA specify that there must be park and rides in Lakeville?
Mr. Shetman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holmberg, it does not.
And Mr. Shetman, would Met Council build park and rides under the UPA without a transit taxing district expansion agreement with Lakeville?
Mr. Shetman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, we would not.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Shetman, if in fact Lakeville chose not to join the transit taxing district, what would be the net effect of the infrastructure improvements north of Lakeville within the transit taxing district?
Mr. Shetman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I think that the, I'm not going to speak to that in great detail, because I think that it's probably better for our UPA manager to handle that, but I think that what you'd see is a disbursement of those investments throughout the additional park and rides, or find an additional park and ride somewhere within the transit taxing district along 35W heading north into Minneapolis.
Representative Keelan or Mason?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Given what you said, is it logical to already at this point have plans to build something in Lakeville when you don't have the other commitments?
Mr. Shetner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a very good question. And I think that the station that we're talking about, in particular on 35W, I don't think that there is a whole lot that we have to, a planning that has to go into figuring out where that appropriate park and ride spot is, because there is a way station just adjacent to 35, at that point before the split, that there is, that MnDOT owns, that would work extremely well for this particular project. So I think that the amount of planning that's going into this project for the Lakeville portion on 35W, I think that it's pretty well known that that is the appropriate spot to put that parking lot facility.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair?
Oh, Representative Medora.
Thank you very much again, Mr. Chair. You said here that the waste station on 35, that it's owned by MnDOT. Are you saying then that MnDOT would take on the authority to operate UPA with a starting point of 35 at that waste station on 35?
Mr. Chair,
Representative, I am not saying that. We wouldn't be able to do that because Lakeville wouldn't be part of the transit taxing district, and there would be no service agreement in place.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Then my question is that if Lakeville continues with this position of not joining the taxing district and we are looking at the UPA, what would then be the next entry point into that system, assuming that we go with the existing taxing district as it stands today?
Mr. Shetner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I guess I'm not quite following your question. Are you asking when would we be proposing? Oh, yes. Representative Hornstein is
deciphering for me here.
And I'm sorry I wasn't.
No, no, that's fine. I'm just trying to follow along here, and I think the end of the line, if that's what you're looking for, would quite possibly be at the Burnsville Transit Station, but I don't want to say that explicitly because there may be an opportunity. The transit passing district ends at Burnsville, the Burnsville line at the south end, and we may have an opportunity for a parking right there. I really don't know. But it would be somewhere within the passing district. How's that?
The rest is Lidor.
We're ending the line then at the Burnsville transit station, and we are taking dollars then from the creation of park and rides in Lakeville. Are you planning for improvements then for the Burnsville transit station to be able to accommodate the Lakeville parkers who will inevitably end up there and not be paying into the capital account? Are there plans right now to improve the parking at the MBTA stop in Burnsville?
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lidor, I appreciate your passion for this.
Mm-hmm.
I would suspect that if Lakeville is not part of the transit backing district and we are not putting those investments that we thought that we would in that particular park and ride, that we would disperse that money throughout the corridor, and I can't tell you 100% that money would go into making sure there was room for the Lakeville folks or for the folks further down, Farmington folks or people from New Prague or New Market Elko or wherever who choose to use the bus system. I can't tell you with 100% confidence that it would go into that park and ride lot, but you would see those investments go throughout that corridor.
I understand that you cannot give me a specific dollar amount that you would use to improve the Burnsville. However, I have grave concerns that that money would make it further north on the line and go into perhaps the Lakeville station or other stations along the UPA. And again, Burnsville, Apple Valley, Rosemount, and Eagan parkers would be under the same constraints that they're under today. And with what we're looking at this line to be able to deliver for service, I cannot imagine that it would not be attractive to our further south communities to hop on the bus and go north. So my concern is that if we do remove this money from the contract for the development of those shoulder lanes into Lakeville and we're not doing the modifications on that way station, that there is some allowance built into the contract to assure Burnsville and Apple Valley that they are going to see some improvements to their parking facilities to be able to accommodate the increased traffic. And I'd like to know if, in fact, that's something that we can ask, and maybe that's something for Mr. Thompson to ask under the UPA contract right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lidor, Mr. Thompson's dealing with the shoulders, Metro Transit, Metropolitan Council will be dealing with the park and ride.
Okay.
I think that those are fair points. I think that I can't answer those with 100% certainty right now, but I'd be happy to come back and talk to you and with one of our representatives who is managing the UPA for Metro Transit and have a discussion with you. He'll be able to have the detail on the park and rides that you're looking for, but also we're looking at adding new park and rides as well. So mm-hmm. I understand that the Burnsville station is experiencing massive demand.
Yeah.
Representing a transit system, we love that. The fact that there is that demand out there. There are growing pains, and the UPA, we're hoping to attract additional riders. We are also, as I mentioned, adding additional park and rides throughout that corridor, and we will have to look at how we disperse those monies throughout the corridor, and that's about the best I can answer you right now.
If there are no further questions, we do have a lot of amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chetman. Mr. Thompson, I presume you may stick around.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd be happy to stick around.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It was a good discussion. I would just conclude by saying that, I know Representative Houseman is not in the room, but some of the concerns that she had raised are not dissimilar to the same kind of challenges we face
for example, on the Central Corridor, when we have a very rigid set of expectations from the federal government in order to get matching money. It's something called the Cost Effectiveness Index. And so, you know, we have similar challenges here, but I would say in the end, in order to get federal money, given our budget situation, it's a net gain for the region. So I would just
want to conclude
by saying that and encourage your support. Now, I'll take these in maybe alphabetical order, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, numerical, maybe?
Numerical.
That's pretty bad.
Well, we have the B6 and the C6. No.
You also have a 5, too, don't you?
Right. We were in the Government Operations Committee, and I did not take these on purpose there because they're very transportation-related. So, the H3725A5 amendment.
Okay.
Is move the first one I would like to move, Mr. Chair.
All in favor of adopting that amendment, A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Okay.
Oh,
adopted.
Thank you, members.
Captain Horsley.
Just so you knew, that's a technical amendment. I believe that MnDOT and Met Council were okay with this. It avoids duplicative authorization language. It clarifies MnDOT's authority and clarifies the new allocation of revenue is only for the 35W corridor where it will be raised. So, A6.
Mr. Johnson, this is what you're talking about?
Yes.
I just wanted to let the committee know that you approve.
Yes. Any questions on the A5 amendment? Not. Okay.
Okay. So, H3725A6.
Okay.
I'd like to move that.
A6 amendment. Say aye.
Aye.
Contrary.
No.
Six.
Can we hear what it is?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm taking an answer.
I do appreciate your support for these, but
You moved the A6 amendment, right?
Yes, correct. So this is an amendment that actually was added in the Senate. This is not a part of the formal agency bill that was presented, it also relates to revenue. In the second year and after, an equal amounts of $1 million go to MnDOT and the Met Council, and then it allocates the remainder based on a formula of 25% to MnDOT and 75% to the Met Council. This was an initiative that Senator Dibble came up with, and I agree with it. He wants to make sure that that we have the revenues needed to operate these the transit portion of the UPA. So I believe originally it was 100%, but it was amended down to 75% by Senator Rest in the Senate. And
Mr.
I would urge support.
Question. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, just a technical change. I think that on page 2, it's actually line 20, in line 1.3, the amendment. And also in 1.5, it's actually page 22. I'm sorry, line 22. Okay,
well, I guess I'd just ask Mr. Burris to comment on that.
I think we're just one line off, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ruth, the A6, A7, and A8 amendments all amend the amendment that was just adopted. It's going against the new language. We want to be looking at the A5 amendment to compare these next amendments.
Thank you. That makes sense.
Any questions further on the A6? Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, when we put in the language for the MnPass, we tried to provide that the revenues generated in the corridor would not be used to supplant Met Council funds, but rather to enhance the corridor. So in other words, by virtue of the fact that people using that corridor were paying more, that it wouldn't send Met Council money. So it should be going into that corridor as well, hither and yon. And I'm wondering if that issue was discussed at all relative to this language, or...
It wasn't, but I do think that's a good suggestion. And
I think it's in statute. Isn't that correct? Is that what you're talking about, Representative Holbrook?
Well, yes.
Mr. Chair, when we did the MNPAS language, which is up at the top of the amendment, we tried to make sure that this was for expanded levels of service, et cetera. So, I mean, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it today, but you may want to take another look at this and look at putting some language in there so that the revenues actually are for enhancements and not basic.
Mr. Chair, I do consider that a good suggestion, and I don't, you know, we're going to take this to finance and ways and means, and I will try to work with Mr. Burris and our friends in the Senate and try to get some language in there that
represents
be consistent with the 394 language.
Yeah, right. Representative Holberg's talking about what's in effect now in statute on 394.
Correct.
Right. Any further questions or comment on A6? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
The A6 amendment is adopted.
A7 is allocates in the second year and after up to $1 million to MnDOT and the remainder to Met Council. I guess I would just ask Mr. Burris to clarify how that. I'd like to move it, but then ask Mr. Burris how that's different from the A6.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the A6 and the A7 amendments are in conflict with each other.
So I don't want to move the A7.
Put it shortly. Yeah, you,
okay.
I think you want to move one or the other.
I don't know which one, who has the A7, but...
They're both yours.
Why would I do an amendment that were in conflict with each other? Well, Mr. Chair, I will then withdraw the A7.
Withdraw the A7 amendment, okay. Representative Hornstein.
I think we had a fallback position.
A7 amendment.
A7 was the fallback position.
And your next amendment?
Okay. A8, Mr. Chair and members, is a specific...
You move the amendment?
Yes, I'd like to certainly move this with enthusiasm. And Mr. Chair, the reason is that particularly in my area, this is really coming from the city, the initiative of a city council member and others, you know, in her constituency, which is shared in my district, and it speaks to some of the concerns that Representative Housen had about the process and our people included. And you know, I do believe that despite the very rapid time frame that we had to move on this, we had a pretty good coalition along the corridor and a good conversation along the corridor about this. Of course, a lot of the groundwork was laid over the years with our 35W Rapid Transit project, so people were aware of that, and of course the Cedar Corridor happened over a number of years. But certainly parts of Minneapolis, there is a lot of concern about whether this lane will eventually revert back to all-purpose status. You know, under the UPA, it's not. It's a dynamically priced shoulder lane with very specific requirements and very specific stipulations associated with it. There is concern, at least in some of the neighborhoods that abut 35W in Minneapolis, and I would think possibly other parts of the corridor, that that this be really on a long-term basis, this lane is going to be this dynamically priced shoulder and transit disposition as envisioned in the UPA. We don't want there to be a purpose lane associated with this. So this just puts into statute, you know, what really is the status quo and for UPA, which is this is a dynamically priced shoulder. It's in many ways comfort language for people in Minneapolis that have been fighting lane expansion on 35W for about 25 years.
Mr. Thompson, is this consistent with what you have? And is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, members, we are, the department is somewhat concerned with some of this this amendment here. Not within the UPA corridor itself. We're fine with the intent that that dynamic shoulder was on 35W is not a general purpose lane. But the dynamic shoulder tool that we are creating here that could be applied to other corridors in the region eventually, should we prove it successful. In some of those other corridors, it would not make operational sense to price those. They would maybe be short stretches or something. So we have some concern that this would be, we're fine with it being part of the UPA corridor, but what is the implications for other corridors should dynamic shoulders in short stretches be part of other corridors.
Well, and Mr. Chair, just, I don't know, there might be members that want to debate this. I would certainly, that is the intent, and I don't know if it's just a short oral amendment that I could add, Mr. Burris, that would make this prescriptive to the 35W corridor exclusively. That is the intent.
While he's working on it, I'll take another question. Was Representative Nelson actually for?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm Director. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Ornstein. This is not going to come back and year after year, similar to the the discussion we always have about the practice freeway on 35E. Would this language stop that today from coming forward in the future?
Representative Ornstein.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I can't predict who's going to be in office or who might add amendments, but I think that similar to 35E, this is an agreement between the public sector and neighborhoods, I think. So in that regard, Representative Nelson, you're correct. This is what this responds to. But I would hope we wouldn't have that year after year. I don't think we will. I think this is going to be a success. I'm confident this is going to be a successful corridor, and that the changes being made and the neighborhoods affected will be able to coexist.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, you were having me bounce back and forth here because you had general purpose lanes out and then your A5 put them in and now your A8 taking them back out, so I'm kind of bouncing along with you here. And I just want to put a few things forward for you to maybe consider, and first of all, ask a question of your testifier. Is it MnDOT's intent to monitor this corridor 24/7 and open the dynamic shoulder lane at any time that there's congestion?
Mr. Thompson.
Chair, members of the committee, the intent will be there are certain hours of the day, probably mostly overnight and weekends, where this will not be open. It'll be a shoulder. The actual hours where it's open to traffic is still under discussion in terms of what kind of model traffic and set it to when traffic is, but it's a tool there to fight congestion. So as congestion changes, grows, and shifts around, we should have it open anytime there is congestion.
And Mr. Chair, if the answer were different and MnDOT was going to be willing to monitor this and use it when necessary, I might be more comfortable with this language, but some may recall the outrage of the commuters on the 394 corridor when the lane sat there completely empty and nobody could use it, and people were really angry about that, and then that ended up having to open up those lanes to let the commuters use those lanes because it just made no sense to have that lane sitting there where everybody else was all backed up, and the commuters won. And back to your point about this coming back every year, I think we should really think this through. And if the issues are air quality, some of the things around congestion, again, if you've got three or four lanes heading north into Minneapolis, whether it's a Twins game or a Vikings game or whatever, the dynamic shoulder is completely closed, and you've got bumper-to-bumper traffic, you're not doing well for your air quality standards. But again, you're going to have a lot of really angry commuters picked off that they see that strip of cement, if you will, and aren't allowed to access it. So I think, Representative Hornstein, as you move forward, I understand the pressures from your constituency, and you and I, as we've become friends over the years, I think you have a better appreciation for some of the concerns of the suburban constituencies. But I think that in practice, to have that lane closed off and having massive congestion on the corridor is really not going to serve any of us well as far as public policy makers go.
Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, anytime there, this wouldn't preclude us from, it would be open during hours where there's traffic. But it would be, as this is written, as I understand it, when it is open, it's open as a priced lane for carpools, free buses, and for those who choose to pay a toll.
And Mr. Chair, and I understand that. My preference would be that sometimes it would be a general purpose lane. If you have to price it all the time, you know, if it's 10 cents or whatever, if it's on the way to the Vikings game, or in order to satisfy the dynamic pricing component of it having to be tolled, I understand that, but I think that MnDOT should be prepared to be able to open that up in the event of special events, weather, accidents, etc. Because again, I think the commuters are going to really torque if they're all backed up on three or four lanes and there's just one completely open.
Mr. Thompson, would they have to adjust this lane 1.6? Is that what you're talking about? That's what you make an adjustment there in your oral amendment or not?
Mr. Chair, yeah, that our concern originally was about this being taken away the option for a dynamic shoulder general purpose on other corridors. But if there, you know, the more flexibility we have to respond to changing traffic conditions, the better we can operate this dynamic shoulder too. So, adjustment. I guess we'd like the flexibility, but we know the city's intent and their desire that it never be a general purpose lane, and I think we can work with them on how it is operated outside of having to have legislation too.
Representative Hornsby, what was your oral amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that I had asked Mr. Burris to maybe see what he work his magic here and help out with. He knows the intent, and maybe he has some language for us.
Mr. Chair, members, I do have some language. I think, and it's not actually one simple change because there are multiple concepts that need to be separated out. It might be easiest for me to read how it would read as amended, as sure. orally amended.
Sure.
To start with that. So it would read as, so well, I'm on 1.6, the changes are, sorry, on 1.5 of the A8 amendment. As price lanes, general purpose lanes, high occupancy vehicle lanes are as shoulders as defined in section 169.01, subdivision 73, period. The commissioner may prescribe the conditions under which the lanes may be used, period. And then it's a new paragraph, paragraph B. The commissioner may not operate a dynamic shoulder lane on March Trunk Highway 35W from March Trunk Highway 94 to March Trunk Highway 62 as a general purpose lane, and a dynamic shoulder lane may only be used by, and then the language stays the same, and then on 1.14, paragraph B changes to paragraph C.
That's a pretty big change.
Mr. Chair, I'm comfortable with this, and again, I think to reduce this fraction to its lowest term.
The Representative Hornstein, can we temporarily lay this over, and he's going to get some
okay.
copies made for the committee?
Okay, but just, okay. Mr. Chair and members, I mean, if this addresses the point that Representative Holberg raised and that MnDOT now seems to be more comfortable with, which is that this really would this language in this amendment would apply exclusively to the I-35W corridor.
Is this your last amendment?
Yes.
Oh, we should temporarily lay this over to you to get some copies made. That's what we're going to do.
The committee, yeah. Mr. Chair, if you would feel more comfortable with that, I'm open to that.
I think we've got quite a change. Representative Holberg?
Mr. Chair, not to this. I have a question after you work your way through this.
I think it'll only take a minute.
Are you on hold? Are you ready for a question while you're while we're waiting?
We'll take your question, Grant.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, on the southbound side, the HOV lanes now are general purpose off hours. Is it your intent to allow that to continue to occur?
Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chair, you know, again, this has to, and Representative Holberg, this has to be, I think, a conversation between MnDOT, the Met Council, and the cities, you know, regarding that. You know, I don't know if this, are you referring to the amendment or just the concept in general?
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to figure out your intent here, and if it only relates to that portion of the dynamic shoulder pricing northbound, that's fine, but I would hate to do something here that would actually reduce capacity of the system in that southbound non-peak. Those are general purpose lanes, and I'm hoping that we're not planning on min passing both.
Representative Horn.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I think that again that we've not really had, I think, the conversation about the southbound long term disposition of this as of yet. We know that we'll be able to get people down to at least, you know, 62 and some of those buses will go along the Cedar Corridor. Some will then go into the, you know, HOV lane south of 62. But, and I think Met Councilman Duncan can comment on this. I think there is, you know, correctly a little bit of a lag between what we're going to do southbound and ultimately and what's happening northbound.
But, Mr. Chair, if I might, the language that you're wanting us to adopt now is only relative to northbound in the dynamic shoulder pricing
right.
area of the corridor.
Correct.
Just so I know what your intent is here, what
yeah.
you're trying to
yeah,
do.
We haven't, I mean, and, we can have comments. I mean, I think that we have an issue with southbound, and we need to continue to work that through.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
That's something. Okay.
Representative Medore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And okay, another question here then. That brings me to the EPA is being planned to run the northbound lanes. What is the projection of traffic for the southbound lanes? I mean, how quickly are you expecting to deal with this problem? Because, as you know, 77 Cedar has been. That we had the same situation, only some of the lanes were operating, then we put a third lane, and then the northbound lanes never materialized. Now we have massive congestion on Cedar Avenue. I'm a little reluctant if we're not addressing this anywhere in the bill to deal with the southbound traffic. And I guess I'd like some clarification of what the plans are for that and how long we plan to sit before we take action, because it's been... Representative Holbrook probably has a better time frame than this, but for that Cedar Avenue third lane northbound, we've been sitting there for as long as I've been living in Apple Valley, almost 20 years waiting for it to happen. So what is the plan to deal with that under the UPA?
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, under the UPA, the federal funds that we receive and the funds we're budgeting from the state level do not provide for any lane expansion on 77. We do not doubt that there is a congestion problem there, and that would be dealt with in a separate process from our UPA program. But
Mr. Chair, I'm not speaking to 77. I'm giving that as an example of a project that was only halfway done. So I'm a little bit concerned if we're looking at another situation where we will have traffic moving in one direction only one part of the day, and the rest of the day we're all sitting in traffic waiting again to get home. So what is the plan, and how quickly will you be addressing this southbound issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we actually do have a plan for that, and that is the $300 million we're investing in the 35W Crosstown project. All our modeling forecasting show that the southbound piece, where there isn't a dynamic shoulder, will be uncongested. It is definitely congested today. But that's because of that bottleneck at 62 and 35W.
Mm-hmm.
And that is being corrected with a tremendous expansion in capacity.
Okay.
So that was one reason we pulled out the dynamic shoulder southbound, because of the less pressing need than the northbound piece. Now, as traffic grows and things change, that could come back, and we would not be precluded geometrically from building a southbound dynamic shoulder lane. And nothing we're doing in UPA would prevent us from physically building a southbound lane. But I think the problem is going to be far less because of our major investment we're making today in the 35W Crosstown project.
We have the amendment distributed, I believe. Does everyone have a copy of the amendment as amended? No further questions. All in favor say aye.
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 Contrary, the A8 amendment is passed. That's the last of your amendments, Representative Feinstein. We have other amendments. Our A1, and starting with those amendments, are those? Which amendments are those?
Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment was an amendment I had was going to offer to this bill, but we adopted it as amended as part of the House File 3800 policy bill, so I withdraw the A1 amendment.
We have an A6, I believe, left too. No, we did that one.
Yeah.
Do we have other amendments?
That went from -299 to -298.
we have no other amendments, right?
Mr. Chair, no, well, there is one more that I am challenged on whether or not to submit to the committee, and again, it's regarding the expansion of the taxing district into Farmington and Lakeville. At this point, I am not convinced that we have worked out enough of these issues. And it is not my intent to hold up the processing of the UPA. However, we have local county officials discussing transit into Lakeville. We have the Cedar Avenue project discussing transit into Lakeville. And yet we have a resolution that was passed here last night that basically says we're not going to join the taxing district. I'm asking my bonding chair to approve projects for this. And with great passion, I go to her and discuss these transit projects. And yet, I'm being told today that Farmington and Lakeville is again choosing not to participate in this discussion, despite the fact that you told us at the beginning of this testimony that this UPA project picked up on projects that had been sitting on the books for quite a while. So the idea that these communities were not engaged in this discussion is not really truthful. And again, it is not my intention to hold up the UPA, Representative Hornstein. I'm not trying to make this difficult, but at the same time, I have my local representatives here who have great concerns about building the UPA and not allowing access or development into those communities, and yet we have anticipated and already regularly used riders from those two communities. So I'm really at a loss here as to what to do. If I try to look out for my communities here and our need to develop transit in the South Metro, I feel compelled to put the amendment on and ask Representative Hornstein to accept the amendment to include Lakeville and Farmington in the taxing district. If I don't, I'm again leaving this tremendous void of capital dollars for improvements for the MBTA in my community. And I'm not really sure that we've even addressed that issue here today. I do have the amendment prepared. I have no problem arguing for it, whether it's accepted or not, but I guess I would like the courtesy of allowing perhaps our local MBTA, Mr. Chair, if it wouldn't be too much time. We allowed Mr. Garofalo quite a bit of time the other day to discuss whether or not this is beneficial, but what they see the impact of the MBTA without the taxing district expansion.
Two things. I'd like to ask Representative Hornstein what he thinks. And apparently, I've just been informed, supposedly, we're supposed to clear this room by 5:30. Is that correct? Okay. The other thing, it appears to me, the taxing district issue has come before, and actually, that, in my opinion, is a tax issue, which I think you understand, too. But we could definitely, you say you have people here, and we have...
I do, and if they could each just be given a few minutes, if they prefer, or even amongst the three of them, they can decide. I have the mayor of Burnsville, Elizabeth Kelch, who's also the MBTA chair. I have an MBTA executive member, Beverly Miller, and I also have, from the city of Apple Valley, Ruth Grendahl. And again, we've been, you know, it's unfortunate that this is a local issue, and Mr. Chair, I do always appreciate your leadership on this issue that we shouldn't be discussing local issues here, but that's MnDOT Metropolitan Council, but the UPA is such a unique situation, and the fact that this has not been addressed and not resolved, and we are now less than we're weeks away from having to have these bills passed, is very, very upsetting to me and upsetting to my community and upsetting to my representatives here. So I'm very much at a loss here with regards to how to move forward on this. I have no assurances that the Metropolitan Council has solved this problem. None. I have resolutions from the city of Lakeville and Farmington saying they're not going to join the taxing district. And yet we're asking the state of Minnesota to give $53 million in matching funds for this project. And I'm confused and frankly, I'm not understanding what the benefit is to do that. And I'm not allowed to discuss permitting
although I think that that's absolutely reasonable and should be an expectation if we move forward with this, that permitting be allowed into these communities. We're not allowed to address that. And I guess I would like to ask Mr. Chair where that perhaps would happen. But I think it's time that we begin to address this, because we have Representative Beard over here with the same situation a few years down the line, that prior Lake Line is going to be in the same boat. I mean, Lakeville, the only reason I'm not just asking for Lakeville to join us but to ask Farmington is that Lakeville would be in the same boat next year with that UPA line being overfilled with residents from outside of the taxing district. I'm being told the governor will not support my House File 2140, which expands the taxing district, the entire 7-county metro. I don't know what to do, and I'm not getting any reassurances from either MnDOT or the Metropolitan Council that they are prepared to deal with this problem. And I am not prepared to tell my residents and my community who have been paying into this and building the capital line that we have it with MBTA that this is okay. So I'm really at a loss here, Mr. Chair. Again, I do apologize for this being a local issue that has had to come to this committee.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, if I could just provide a little perspective. I'm not, just to be clear on the public participation piece, that's the first issue that Representative Madora, Mr. Chair, members addressed. You know, Lakeville is a part of this agreement, and there have been conversations within Lakeville, as I understand, about the UPA. Now, to the point about the specific park and ride, we have testimony on the record here today that if Lakeville were to not enter into the transit taxing district, there would be no UPA in Lakeville. So I think that needs to be underscored here. I would certainly encourage Lakeville. I think it would be a boon to their community to have that park and ride, but you know, the way things are now, they can take that decision in their hands to not be a part of the UPA. I think it wouldn't be a good one, but there is a process, as I understand it, going on to encourage this. Now, we have Representative Madora's amendment that she wants to incorporate into this bill already in the transportation policy bill. We have voted on that. It is in that bill. That bill, I understand, does now have to go to the tax committee, where I think there can be a very good debate about this issue. I would just caution against putting that provision into too many bills here, because as we've heard today, we have a very, very strict timeline. I would like to get this UPA bill through the committee process and onto the floor as soon as possible without an additional stop. So I understand these issues. I have, traveled down to the park and ride in question here. I really, really hope the parties can come together. We have the Madora Amendment already in a bill that's been voted on this committee. So, you know, I would certainly, with a heavy heart, would have to oppose it if you went forward with it, because I think we have that already incorporated in another bill.
What we'll do, Representative Hornstein, we had testimony, I think, I don't know if you say the other side or whatever it is, the other day, quite compelling testimony appeared. They're pretty, as long as we have the four people here, or whoever it is, Representative Madora, if we could give them some short time. We have MnDOT here, and we have Metro Council here, at least they can hear what's going on, but it shouldn't reflect, because we will not be taking the amendment on this bill. Is that okay, Representative Hornstein?
So thank you. That's very, I understand that, and I think that people who have traveled here obviously should have time before the committee, but it's my understanding that we will not take that amendment. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, I will vacate the hot seat here and have our friends from the South Metro.
Trying to keep a balance, Representative Holbrook.
And I appreciate that very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm just along for the ride.
If you would identify yourself with me, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Chairleader. I'm Elizabeth Couch. I'm the mayor of the city of Burnsville and chair of the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. And thank you for the opportunity to address you and the members of the committee. It's been very educational to sit here and to learn
from Mr. Zetlin what the process might be in terms of transit. I won't take up much of your time. I understand that you, and I understand this from council meetings as well, that you need to vacate the room. So let me just be very brief. I like hearing that if you're not in the transit taxing district, you don't get the service. But, sir, before you, I believe that we have sent out a map that shows where the services and the riders are from throughout the metropolitan area. And we do service the five communities that are the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, provide services for transit south of the Minnesota River. And we're happy to do that. It's a burden for our taxpayers, but it is part of being a regional player. So as we continue to grow, and the Met Council's statistics tell us that we're going to continue to grow in the next 10 years, it is very clear to us that we need to make sure that the taxing district also expands. When the taxing district was put into place and established in 1976, it was supposed to also be tied to the Metropolitan Urban Service Area Line, which is called the MUSA Line. The district has not adjusted since 1976, yet the MUSA Line continues to grow. And the cities of Apple Valley, Burnsville, Eugene, Rosemount, and Savage continue to pay for transit south of the river. And we believe that it is time for the transit district to be adjusted. And when the regional population growth in from 2000 to 2020 is going to be 1.3% per year, 1.3% per year, within the transit taxing district, there will be an additional nearly 500,000 residents and 400,000 jobs. The non-transit area will add just 65,000 jobs, but more than 300,000 residents. In the MBTA transit area, catchment area as we call it, population will grow by 2%, 2% per year. Let me say that again, 2% per year. And our area will add 65,000 residents and 35,000 jobs. And the non-transit portion of our area will add just 10,000 jobs, but more than 80,000 residents. The basic transit demand is growing faster in the MBTA area. And so the map shows you that. And in the fall of 2007, 52% of the cars parked in Apple Valley were from outside the transit district. And sir, and members of the committee, I can tell you the same is in Burnsville, because our parking facilities in Burnsville are over-parked. And I get, as the mayor of Burnsville, phone calls from our residents who complain about violations in parking at the park and ride and also at our transit facilities because it is overparked. And so when you talk about capital and operations, I hope that you will take into consideration the growth and the expansion of what's happening. We like to be good neighbors, but there's a time that comes when those who are continuing to pay are paying and paying and paying without relief. And so we're here to ask you to please consider that as you deliberate these very important issues, that I believe the riders of our region, not just south of the Minnesota River, but in the region, have also spoken with their feet, because you can have the same kind of testimony from other suburban transit providers outside of the metropolitan area.
And I thank you for the opportunity to allow us to speak to you and to support what we heard from the Met Council rep, that if it doesn't, that the one sticky point, and I think Representative Madure addressed it, if those outside of the transit district do not opt into the transit district, how do we deal with that when we continue to pay? And I think that's a very important issue. And my colleague, Council Member Grundle, who is also on the board of the MBTA, is here with us, and our Executive Director, Beverly Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. Do you have...
I can be brief, Mr. Chair.
I would appreciate it if it's not...
It won't be repetitive.
Yeah, thank you.
My name is Ruth Grundle, and I currently am the Treasurer of the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, and I've been on the Apple Valley City Council for 11 years. As Mayor Couch said, 52% of the people parking at our transit stations in Apple Valley are from outside the taxing district. Our parking lots are so full that recently eminent domain had to be used to obtain one of our businesses, so we're going to lose $100,000 property taxes to provide for the cities farther south from us. And I have a constituent who sent me a letter. I've been up there testifying about expanding the taxing district since 2005, and this can summarize it best in one of my constituents. Tonight, as I rode a Route 477 bus from downtown Minneapolis to Apple Valley, a two-hour-plus ride thanks to the snowstorm, I listened to a gentleman explain from his seat to a woman standing in the packed aisle of the bus that he, as a Lakeville resident, lives in a community that chooses not to tax its citizens a whopping $23 per year so that Lakeville can participate in the MBTA. His Lakeville resident seated on an MBTA bus while dozens of others stood, my constituents who are paying to be in the taxing district, left at the bus at the Apple Valley Transit Station, where he had parked his car all day at no cost. It amazed me to hear no embarrassment in this individual's voice. He lives in one of the largest and fastest growing communities in the state of Minnesota, a community that consciously chooses to have its citizens freeload off its neighbors rather than provide them a transit system. This issue is about dollars, but it's also about having them at the table helping us plan. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I just have to make the point. Lakeville residents and every other resident, whether they're in Elko and Newmarket, Elk River, Chisago County, about 95% of the revenue supporting the transit system in the metropolitan area are paid for all taxpayers in the state of Minnesota and fare payers. And so this is a very small portion. They are not freeloaders. They are paying dearly for this system. In addition, Lakeville made a substantial contribution to the Apple Valley Transit Station as a result of a Cedar Avenue project in Lakeville. The federal transit dollars that accrued to that project were given to the Apple Valley Transit Station. So, you know, we are not freeloaders. We have contributed mightily to the system as a whole, in fact, directly to the infrastructure that supports MVTA.
Thank you. I'm sure this issue will be come before. I'm sure the text will be.
Yes, thank you.
It should be resolved. Appreciate your comments. The lady in the middle, you have any comments? Thank you very much for coming. Sorry that we did have some testimony. Would have been pretty vocal, I believe, the other day if you'd have been here. Not
we
vocal,
heard about it.
Not, I don't mean vocal, maybe excited.
Dramatic.
That's it. If there are no further questions, then Representative Hornstein, where did he leave? No, that's when you were going to vote on his bill. I'm waiting for him.
Can I just ask one more very quick question?
Shut the door.
Representative Hornstein or the Metropolitan Council rep, what is the date that we are giving as a deadline for the for Lakeville to join the taxing district to be able to provide service on the UPA? What is the drop-dead date that we are requiring Lakeville to join the taxing district before they tell their citizens that they are not going to be part of the UPA? Mm-hmm. I'd like to know that date.
Are you able to answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Madure, to the best of my knowledge, that date would be May 12th, because that is when we basically have to have the agreement in hand. I will tell you, and it is with great hesitancy that I tell you this, that if the legislature passed a bill, House File 2800, that allowed counties to impose a quarter-cent sales tax for and create a joint powers board to handle this. And that money can be used for transitway capital and transitway operations. And the UPA, both on 35W and 35 and Cedar Avenue, are transitways. And if Dakota County, and this will be an issue that I get to stay out of, it'll be between the counties and the cities, if Dakota County chooses to impose that sales tax, then every citizen in the city here in Dakota County will be paying a sales tax for transitway operating and transitway capital. And that will be an issue as to whether or not they are contributing toward the UPA. So let me be clear, and I just talked to Mr. Dan Kane about this a second ago. The way this sits today is that by May 12th, Lakeville has to join the transit taxing district, or else we will not be putting those investments in that city. Let me be clear on that. Just keep in mind the whole other issue, because that could change, you know, tomorrow, next week, whenever the Joint Powers Board decides how they want to spend that money and what is eligible for that. All the citizens of Dakota County will be contributing for transitway operating and transitway capital, and the UPA, which includes two transitways, and they can have that discussion amongst themselves. But for the Met Council right now, May 12th is the day.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. Any further questions on the bill? If not, Representative Hornstein, you renew your motion. What do you want to do with it?
I'll renew my motion to pass House File 3725 as amended with a re-referral to the Finance Committee.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Motion passed. And the next meeting is March 25th, 4 o'clock. That's next Tuesday?
Thank you, Mr. Chair members.
Thank you. Meeting adjourned.